And now, the moment you've all been waiting for. Andy White and Nick Butler talk social media.
I think if we have an intro that's based on people scripting it, they're not going to get it.
So what do you think we should say?
Conversations around social media, technology, two of the brightest social media entrepreneurs in the south of England today.
Yeah, let me write that down.
I think the idea is we've got to go around every cafe in the south of England and record a different episode each one.
What should we call it, though?
It's all about social media. It's Andy White and the Loudmouth Man. Social media white noise.
I like it.
And now... Oh, sod it. Everything they just said.
And we're on air.
This is it. Without the seagulls. Good morning. Hey. Episode 45. Episode 45 of...
Social media, white noise, episode 45. Hello, where are all the seagulls?
And you said hey.
I did say hay.
Why?
Because there's a shortage of hay. You know, okay. There's been hay rustling.
You know what? We should also stay alert because we need more alerts.
Do we?
Indeed.
Okay, excellent.
Friend of mine actually the other day told me that his wife was eaten by a cannibal while he was watching that Russell Crowe film. It's a gladiator. He said, no, I really miss her. Anyway.
Okay.
Shall we get on with it?
All right. We're in the Utopia Cafe on Gardiner Street in Brighton. We're in the back garden and we're underneath a tree fern. Yes, a tree fern. Dickinsonia. By saying that fast three times when you've had a few coffees.
It's just like Dickens cider.
Yeah, that's
that
right.
That fabulous taste of cider that is Dickens cider.
Or is it Wellingtonia? I can't remember.
There
now.
We go. What is this? See, this is you showing off your whole zoo-ia crypto.
Well, I'm more of a zoologist than a horticulturalist or even a botanist, so I've probably got the. I think is Dicksonia or anyway. What are we talking about today, Nick?
I just want to hear you say Dicksonia a few more times.
On the day that Andy was worried his MacBook battery might be failing.
We're up against the battery walls. We're in
no,
the
I think
cafe.
We're right.
Again, the cafe is...
The Utopia Cafe.
Utopia Cafe. And I have to commend them, first of all, on the fantastic
yes.
sized, appropriately positioned white mugs.
Nick is very pleased because it's quite a large, parallel-sided mug. He does not have to put on his large radius of curvature mouth attachment to drink
it. You don't need to have the rather ridiculous two-handed lifting of the cup to the lips routine. You can grab it. You can grab the mug. Mm. Solidly in your right hand.
You can
fondle the keyboard of your Mac in your left hand.
And then you can
record
spill
a podcast.
It all over your MacBook.
Mm. So coffee is particularly excellent as well, actually.
Coffee's good. Environment's good.
Everything's fantastic.
It is fantastic.
And we're talking about death.
Yeah. Today it's the death show.
Now, look, this is, I think... It's unfortunately a sensitive topic at the moment in Sussex, since there was the recent accident in Wisborough Green that left four teenagers in hospital, and sadly one of them died over the weekend. Mm-hmm. So obviously I just want to say up front, this isn't a conversation that was spurned because of this. Mm-hmm. This was actually, the conversation came up on Facebook, and I think this is now even more poignant.
It is.
So obviously our sort of best wishes and thoughts go out to the families of those teenagers that are fighting for their lives in hospital. But I just want to be clear that we're not doing the show because of that. Because it seems timely. And I think there's so much that... we're certainly not for our grandparents. We are never going to consider the position of how to handle their electronic affairs and their online affairs. But the fact is that we still probably don't have a good grasp socially as to how we are going to deal with the sort of electronic detritus and the stuff that we build up in our lifestyles. You know, our emails, our Facebook status and so forth. Now... Mm. Facebook recently came out with an announcement as to how they were going to deal with accounts for deceased users, and they're talking about memorialising an account, which is basically going in and removing their status updates and locking off the account, stopping it from being logged into, deleting emails and so forth, but leaving the account there so that other people can leave behind memorials and write on the wall and leave comments on the wall.
Yeah, we've actually talked about this in the previous episode, haven't we, Nick?
We've touched upon it in the past, and it's just something that I sort of want to come back to, because now Facebook have approached it, and there's a number of areas here that I still think that we probably don't actually understand how to address. They'll have their Facebook contact, so they'll leave the Facebook wall open. But who will be moderating that wall? How will that wall be moderated to stop vandals and spammers coming along at a later date? Somebody actually still needs to have control over that account in order to leave it in a memorialized state. Twitter is talking about backing up the account of the user and then deleting it. Now, I can remember a couple of years back, well, a few years back actually, Ashley Spencer, who was known as Ash P. Mama and tended to sort of join her character around her Twitter avatar and so forth around. And she was, she'd just had a baby girl. She was just off to see a football game. She was killed in a car crash on return from football game. And the account was left there. And the question was how to leave, you know, how would her husband pick up the account? How would her family pick up the account? How would it be left? How would it be left there for other people to memorialize? And it, you know, we suddenly have this realization that we are the generation that aren't just going to leave photos and sock drawers and diaries and checkbooks behind, but we're going to leave behind Flickr accounts filled with photos and Facebook accounts filled with emails.
Servers full of podcasts.
Servers full of podcasts. And all of this stuff will need to be curated, managed, and taken away and separated out. Now, obviously, if you went, in the event of the death of a loved one, you'd go to their house and you'd take their property, and they'd possibly sort of say, okay, some of this property we'll give to charity, some of this property we'll keep for ourselves as mementos, some of this property will be divvied up amongst loved ones. How does that affect digital rights management? How does digital rights management affect the inheritance of nostalgia? How does digital rights management affect the ability for you to be able to take a much-loved book, and you're not going to know it's a much-loved book other than maybe the read count, or a collection of music, and divvy that up? Because there's no mechanism inside things like iTunes for handling the fact that we don't live as an island. You know, digital rights actually doesn't exist at the moment to handle the fact that we live as a community. It exists to handle the fact that one item wants to be sold once and never again be sold. And that doesn't handle what to do in the event of...
So you're talking about two things here. You're talking about the acquisition of digitally managed rights content that they may have purchased.
Yep.
But we're also talking about their digital legacy and what should be done with that.
I mean, we don't give any thought to... there's this sort of assumption that, they'll just have access to emails. And I've spoken to a few lawyers about this, and the lawyers have said, you get the various legal paperwork together and you present the legal paperwork to the company, and the company then hands over the information. It's like, well, actually, not all companies work that way. Not all companies have access to passwords, so they have to reset passwords. My concern is Twitter that says, oh, actually, in order for us to say an account is not active, we have to have a sort of written letter and proof of publication of that person's notification that they're deceased. But what if that's faked? What if somebody fakes the death of another individual and then writes to Twitter? That person goes on holiday, and for a laugh, that person decides, I'm going to be heads down from Twitter for a few days, so I won't be signing with Twitter. And in that time, somebody else fakes their death online sufficient enough that Twitter's convinced. Twitter backs up the account and deletes it, and it's gone. And the other scope here is, of course, once you go into that information, what about the contracts that you have between people? This is about that overseen privacy. And what if you're talking to somebody and you're sharing information with somebody and that person dies? So somebody else now gets access to that account to go through it. Now your privacy is blown again. So we still need to have a way to say, actually, in the event of my death, this data needs to immediately destroy itself because I don't want it left behind. You might actually have information that you've shared with somebody that then blows out of proportion some scenario because now you've got information out there that somebody else is reading that you didn't think would happen before. And this has happened in the past. I mean, you have love letters and you have checkbooks and you have membership cards to things that loved ones didn't realise people were involved with. And to a certain extent, that's not going to change. But there is potentially the chance for that to escalate far quicker because we keep all of this information longer. We don't treat it in such a way that we would. So
it's a knotty problem, Nick. What's the solution? Is there some elegant solution?
I don't think there's an elegant solution to this, but I think...
Is there an inelegant solution?
I think there is almost this requirement where we, again, need to think about how we're protecting each other's privacy, not so much our own. We need to think about what we're doing to manage somebody else's privacy, manage somebody else's... If I die tomorrow, what's in my email account that might embarrass somebody else? And so, that sudden level of thought of what do I have that somebody else... So this is all information that you sort of maybe want to think about when we're creating data. what's its longevity, let alone, you know, we have a podcast that's MP3. Let's hope in 20 years time MP3 is still a format that everybody's reading and writing. This isn't a question of storage. A lot of people keep coming back to storage as a conversation, but that's by the by. Storage is a moot point now. We can constantly create more storage than we can fill. We're always seeing that progression happening. Speed of access isn't the issue, but what now happens to the physical stuff that we have online digitally, because it doesn't actually erode. You know, we can build it up. I think I was reading somewhere that we now produce more, since 2003, we now produce more information in a year than was ever produced from when the printing press was first published to 2003. We now produce more information, more content. And as a result, we're not, you know, this isn't going to slow down. We're not going to reduce it. And it might actually be a good thing that the Western world contributes 10% of the total population of the world, and that those people who are active online are a huge percentage less of them again. We might think we're the big IO of what we're doing, but let's actually consider for the moment, when you're looking at your data today, what is its impact in 50 years time? Because that's something that people just don't give any thought for at the moment, because we've gotten so much into do it now, move it then, get past it.
But it's interesting as well that this problem is only really sort of now starting to raise its head, because things have moved so fast, and it's only now that we start to come up against this thing. Well, hang on, people are passing away. What happens to their digital legacy?
And it's the other flip side. It's, you know, parents who are having to go through their children's legacy.
Sorry, I think I hope it's not raining. Sorry, carry on.
Parents have to go through children's, and certainly my kids will have to go through my data, and because I've lived my life predominantly online for the last 20 years. There'll be far more of it than I will deal with my parents' data. Certainly my grandparents don't have any electronic data, but my parents will.
Okay, so what would you want your children to do with your data?
Blimey, that's a what would you want? What would you expect?
I don't know. When I go, I just have this vision of my family celebrating my life by playing some of my podcast, but that's probably just a really stupid idea. Won't want to.
You'll have a solar panel enabled graveyard headstone with a built-in MP3 speaker and MP3s on loopback, and the eternity of the graveyard will be haunted by the sounds of
is this social media white noise? No, I think I'll have a cyber headstone that has like a USB connection, and anyone can just grab any stuff off there.
So how we memorialise, and I think there's we do need a kill switch to our data on some level, but it's the kill switch that relates, and this goes back to something I was saying previously about how we don't need a kill switch because data needs to grow old. We need a kill switch because data sometimes needs to be more private in regards to somebody else. And the interesting thing is, there is a kill switch that you can put in emails. You used to be able to send an email and send another email to cancel it.
Oh, right.
And then delete it. And that sort of functionality is now not really supported, because you know, we do a tweet and we delete the tweet, but in reality that tweet is still out there. You know, I have a client who's been asked to delete some information from Facebook, and I've sort of said to him, well, you can delete it from Facebook. That doesn't guarantee that when they look at it, it will appear deleted. Because that's not how the internet works. So we have this legacy stuff we're creating, and we still don't have clarity as to how we are going to answer that. I suspect there will probably be businesses that will launch themselves as an opportunity to say, we will help manage you. You know, maybe funeral services will now sort of come with, you know, we'll do the coffin, casket, and you know, content.
Digital content. But what will they do with the digital content?
And how does it manage it? And where does it go? And where will it be stored? And you know, all of the links. Because, of course, some of these social networks are defined by the links that are within them. So if one of those links is removed, how are those connections still made? Questions really for an ongoing conversation. But certainly one that I think is going to become more and more relevant in the next 10 years.
I keep thinking that somehow data should be tagged as generated by a deceased person, and then it's got certain longevity tags as well on it.
The person who owned this information was, need to have objects related to objects, and you need to have a hierarchical data applied to that. And what you need is some sort of smart object that is attached to every object that tags it. But then you'd probably also need to have a tag to tag that first object's tag. so that you clearly tag the history of that tag and probably another tag for that tag to history archive that, you know. And but we look at information in terms of where we store it and how we access it. Then we look at information in terms of what it means to us and how it's interpreted. Somebody else comes along and looks at information and what it means to them. When you look at a photo on Facebook, you can interpret it one way, and somebody else can interpret this another way. And the photo can. I post information about links that I find. Is that because that's what I think, or is that because I thought that was interesting? So that's the sort of topic that goes from the sort of serious moment into the frivolous moment. But I'm really interested to know what other people are doing out there at the moment.
Feedback, folks.
Feedback to Twitter. Do it on Twitter at loudmouthman or at Dr. Pod, because we don't read emails. Nobody reads emails. When we die, that email address will still be out there.
It will be.
You lot at socialmediawhitenoise.com.
Should we move on to a slightly more jovial topic?
Let's
thing that I really love, these warning labels for bad journalism.
I think they're just warning labels for all journalism.
Well, brilliant.
It's brilliant. Tom Scott, sir, you are a genius, and I raise the mug of coffee to you.
Yeah, I'm going to drink to you as well.
Because that is genius.
There's a link in the show notes to this wonderful article, tomscott.com, on he's made some lovely labels that you can stick on articles in newspapers and magazines and whatever. And how did you find this, Nick? Did someone pointed it in Twitter? Or
this came up in my feed, and somebody else had shared it out. So Tom Scott had built these things up.
Right.
Actually, I think it turned up on Slashdot. And I still read Slashdot. Well, I still keep an eye on what Slashdot says, because you know, it's getting slightly better than Dig, which is saying a lot. And it turned up there, and I looked at this and I thought, these are brilliant. And I asked the question, this is brilliant, but how can I have the same so I can put it on websites?
Yes.
So when I read BBC News websites that attempt to be, you know, inflaming you with the potential of, I can just say this is cut and paste journalism, you know, please be aware. But it turns out Tom Morris is already looking at how to do that, and he's asked Tom Scott for permission.
Oh,
so,
has he? Right.
So the Toms are getting together.
Yeah.
Tom Power. You know, and we'll probably have it tomorrow.
But he's got some great stickers like, warning, journalist does not understand the subject they are writing about.
I like the warning, questions were asked that were not awkward in order to ensure the interviewer would return to be asked again. I think they're brilliant, and I think I honestly feel that there's a lot of the media today is actually more responsible for attitudes in society than any government, than any community. It seems to me that they constantly, and Daily Mail's probably the classic one for it, with its, you know, this causes cancer and this cures cancer, and it's let's not deal with hard science. Let's just deal with fuzzy science and magic thinking.
A couple of great things. I mean, Tom has basically made a PDF that you can, if you've got the right sort of label sizes, I think he's on an English one and a US one, so you can print them out for yourself. But I love this idea of online ones. And what I would like to see is a kind of standard, you know, you got these food labels in the UK, like how many calories has it got, how much fat has it got, daily percentages,
how much accurate content was in this article.
But that should be based on lots of people's opinions. I know, which is dodgy, but isn't it the wisdom of the crowd thing?
Wisdom of the crowd is also the madness of the masses.
Okay, right. Okay, so there's another label. Careful, the person who wrote this article is basing it on the wisdom of the crowds.
Great minds think alike, and fools seldom differ.
Yeah, there's another label there, Nick, you could do. But it's, if somehow it could be a social tagging type affair.
Warning, this title is more inflammatory than the actual article contains. Which, I think we need to almost say, you know, these are McDonald labels, McDonald titles, where the picture is grander than the end result. They are great, though, and I've made the effort, because I said, oh, great, I want to do this. But yes, I have made the effort to put an order in for some Avery labels for
have
the
you?
Printer. Because he's been going around and putting them on Metro. And if you've ever gotten on the train, I swear to God, it's like tidal detritus.
Is the Metro. You get thrust into your face as soon as you get down to the underground.
Yeah, so. What I call the stabloids.
Stabloids,
because they stab them at you and say, here you go, kiss me. You're like, no, I don't want them. And I just... You cry out from wondering why, on the one hand, We are being lectured about energy and waste and recycling, and then you get on a train and you could wallpaper your house with the amount of metros and standards that get left behind.
In fact, we know one man who did.
And all these companies that advertise in there are probably also companies that spend their time saying, oh, we're socially responsible, environmentally aware. Stop bloody advertising in these papers. They're wasteful dross that fills up a huge amount of recycling sacks that just go off to tip at the end of the day. Stop reading them, people. You're contributing to the problem. Ah!
And then we wouldn't have to print out these paper labels.
Yes, now we would print out paper labels and stick paper things on them. So we're going to add to the problem because, damn it, I've recycled enough tin cans and I've emptied enough jars out and I've put enough bottles in some bags. I want to know where's my hole in the ozone layer.
Retracting soapbox.
You do not need to have me. I know that Tukey Bunting has commented on a whole sort of one-hour rant cast. Bad idea.
Whose Rantcast was that? Seconds. Your Rantcast?
My other Rantcast.
What's your other Rantcast? Tell me.
No, he's suggesting we take this and turn it into a bigger Rantcast.
Oh, right, a bigger
Rantcast. Because this isn't what it really is, isn't it not?
It is a Rantcast. Yeah, yeah. Perhaps was, that's a wonderful segue onto the... it's funny, I have been for my run this morning, but I'm not as sparky as normal. Don't know why. Why am I not as sparky as normal?
I have no idea, but you know, it's August and we have coffee.
Yeah, that's true. We still had something to eat as well. Had some nice cakes in there.
I have to say, I was a little bit cheeky when I walked in because I had a sign on the back door, and the sign, I always love this because it says Tropical Garden Space Toilet.
Yeah.
And I just looked at the sign and I just thought, well, is it some sort of magical environmentally friendly toilet?
Garden toilet.
Which I basically call the Glastonbury Field.
Yeah.
But no, it's obviously sort of, you know, you go downstairs, there's toilets.
There's a toilet and a garden. Yes, Nicholas, yes.
Yes, I have to say
should
that...
Should we talk about our sponsors? Should we do the advert?
I'm now out here and I have to say that I'm constantly impressed at what I can only describe as pockets of Brighton's quiet.
I'm going to take a picture of you holding the cup up in a minute next to the Dickinsonia.
Dickinsonia, indeed.
Yeah. Come on, time for the advert, isn't
it? Time for the advert. We've been speaking about coffee. First of all, a big thank you to Paul Hadley, a.k.a. Hadley Paul.
Thank you, Paul.
Who sent us the donations for the coffees, which we are still going through.
I drink to you.
Great to come to you. And also to eBuyer at eBuyer.com or twitter.com/eBuyer, who just before I came out today, and this is why I love eBuyer. This isn't about it's the cheapest or it's the fastest. The fact is, it's the best way to shop for peripherals. Because I go online, I think, right, I'm going to need an Epson LX302 printer. I'm going to need a 12-port Netgear 100 megabit network switch. And I'm going to need a bunch of cables.
Social Media White Noise has no affiliation with these products.
And I know that I can just go straight in, I'll find them, I can add them to the basket, and I can get the order done, and I can sit the order in the queue, and it's going to come to me for tomorrow. And that's what you want from shopping. What you want is a shopping experience that makes it easy. An eBuyer makes it easy. And yeah, today I bought the eBuyer mug as well, because I collect mugs, and that's what I do. So thank you, eBuyer, for sponsoring the show.
We salute you, eBuyer.
And I've actually gone through my coffee. That's right.
I've only got an inch left of my coffee. Yes.
It's the old question of, are we near the end of the show yet?
We are near the end of the show.
We've
just got time, Nick. We're at about 23 minutes now.
Blimey.
So the last 7 minutes. Should we talk about something I can't quite get my head round? Google buys digital currency firm Jambool.
Jambool.
Digital currency, Nick. Digital currency.
So
isn't all currency digital these days? It's just numbers, isn't it?
So what it is...
is
Will Harris, TM.
We must get Will Harris on the show.
Will Harris, when you're out there, come on our show.
Will, if you're listening, please come on.
Come on our show.
Do and, come on. We'll buy you a coffee.
Yes, there we are.
Well, and you can hit us if you want. Every time we go, Will Harris, TM.
Google buy Jambool. Now, digital currency. This is the fantastic thing, because you're right. Currency actually isn't real. Money is not a real thing. Right, and
pretty
I think
powerful,
I've talked
you can
about
buy
this,
stuff with it, can't you?
But it's not a real thing.
It's a promise.
It's a promise. It's a fantastic. Well, yes,
it's a promise to give the person some gold from the gold reserves.
Hang on,
which
it
we don't have anymore because Gordon sold them all.
Let's be clear. Is it a promise?
I promise to pay the bearer on demand.
If you have a note in your hand, it will no doubt say, especially in the UK,
I promise to pay the bearer.
The Bank of England promises to pay the bearer
on
and
demand,
then a value,
the sum of.
Now you don't actually have that promise once you move into electronic currency, which is, I think, incredibly dodgy because we've had hundreds of years of working out the best ways to avoid counterfeiting and devaluing currency through these mechanisms. And then in the last 20 years, we've basically switched to the idea that, well, physical cash doesn't carry as much value as digital currency. Now, I've speculated in the past that I reckon that Google are looking to build up a stock market in indexing on keywords and AdWords, because Google could actually build out their own stock market. Now, if you're in that stock market, what you then need to do is you need to be trading with money. And of course, as soon as you're trading with American sterling or you're trading with pound sterling, you're immediately going up against somebody else's stock exchange for currencies. So what if you just create your own currency? I mean, Microsoft did this with Microsoft Points. Microsoft Points are their own mechanism by which they can say, we're hiding the fact that you're spending £17 on this game by telling you it's 1,200 points. And there's such a sort of vagueness that you sort of are disconnected from. And as long as you're disconnected from what it's worth to what you're actually spending, then the value of things begins to get distorted. Not only that, I mean, in Facebook there are already credits. If you can inside Facebook, you can have Facebook credits, and you can use those credits to buy games and items inside Facebook items inside Facebook. Apple, they just basically let you buy pound sterling or, you know, pound sterling or US dollars, etc., and then transfer that into currency. That's outside. It's
okay. I thought it was some horrible interference on my equipment, but it's not. It's a coffee machine.
And all of these mechanisms which are designed to say, let's take away the awareness of what's being spent. So they buy Jamboul. They already have Google Checkout, which lets you basically have an e-commerce functionality. But now let's say they have Google Checkout, but you can spell it with Google Pounds, Google Points, you know, Googles. Let's call the currency Googles. So now they're trading AdWords in Googles and not in pounds, not in dollars, etc. Now they can basically set the value and set the agenda for their own. There's a certain amount here where we look to a game called Eve Online, which is a massively multiplayer online game.
Cool name, Eve.
Eve Online. And what they did is they realized that because they had so many players online who were basically creating virtual money and virtual currency and virtual things that don't actually exist except for they're agreed upon, that are then assigned a currency value. And I've talked about this on Microsoft Xbox Live, where I can buy a t-shirt for my avatar and it costs me 80 Microsoft points, so it's about a pound.
Yeah.
So I've spent a pound, that pound has gone to Microsoft, Microsoft have given me a few hundred points for it, I've then bought a digital thing, and here's the thing, I can't sell that digital thing on later, that's locked into my account. But on EVE Online, if I'd, say, bought a ship, I could sell the ship to another player. So EVE decided they would bring in an economist to help them run their virtual economy.
Okay, I think I'm understanding. Carry on.
And Google is filled, not with just really smart people, but with really smart people who can think about things in a very abstract way. And there's nothing more abstract than money. And once you start thinking that Google can do abstract things with information and abstract things with money and bring those two things together in a digital currency, and then they can move to saying, well, why don't we just have a platform where we're trading on words in a abstract currency with an abstract point value that can have a live update because it's based on what the social networks are feeding back into us, then we've all of a sudden got the race on to say, we're not focusing on how many indexes and keywords are you buying for your website, but how are you buying relevance for your website today? And how many points are you going to spend on that? And that's my idea.
It's if you have a currency, you also have to have a world in which you can spend it.
No. Nope.
And it's kind of...
Not what, a world. What no, you have to have things that you want to spend it on.
Okay, things. Call that the environment. And it sounds like these Microsoft points or that can only be spent, quote unquote, in the Microsoft world. You can't
and it's one way.
It's like you're saying, you bought that t-shirt and you can't sell it to anyone else.
I can't sell it, I can't keep it, there's nothing special about it. I mean, there is in Halo, which is the online one of the online games in Microsoft Universe, it's possible for some gamers to win certain outfits for their characters to play in that game that will then identify them to everybody else as being somebody of a unique value, but they can't resell that on unless they sell access to their account, lock stock. Unless they sort of, and then we're getting into, well, what happens if I set up a number of accounts and I sell access to those accounts? Now, at the moment, that's against the policy for Microsoft. But it probably goes on to a certain extent in colleges and so forth, where people are buying game points and game scores and certain, you know, access to certain features. But we'll wait to see how it grows.
Certainly very interesting.
I think when we look at things like social capital, the investment of of sort of social goodness values of who contributes to what,
yeah.
there's always the way in which we want to be able to track it. And as soon as somebody starts saying, I'll start deciding what the point value will be, I kind of say, well, just keep an eye on who's assigning the points, because whoever's running the judges is running the game. And they're the ones who are actually going to be in charge at the end of the day, not the winner of the game at the end of it.
With that, I'm going to employ my team of scientists to analyse your last 7 minutes of conversation, Nick. With that...
I didn't mean to blow you away. I'm sorry.
With that, it's goodbye from the Dickinsonian and me, Dr. Pod.
And it's goodbye from this fantastic cup of coffee and I, Loudmouth Man.
Goodbye, everyone, and we'll see you next time, next fortnight.
Fast. That went so fast. Please send us feedback.
We've actually got 10 seconds of the show left.
Send us feedback to twitter.com/loudmouthman. twitter.com/DrPod or go to the website and click on the donate button and buy us more coffee.
Yeah.
Remember, the more coffee that Nick has, the rantier he becomes.
We're down to our last £20 note now, you know. We've broken into our last £20 note.
We have indeed. Incidentally, there is a spreadsheet available if anybody wants to see it of what we spend and where and how.
Nick, you're so transparent. I can see right through you.
Actually, I'm open.
You're very open.
I'm open because I can't see who's looking back the other way, so it's not transparency, it's open. Bah!
Right, get rid
Semantics.
Of us. Go.
Go.
Listen
press
to your next
stop.
Podcast.
Okay.
We're going away now.
Okay.
Goodbye.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Thanks for listening to Social Media White Noise, brought to you by Andy White, aka Dr. Pod, and Nick Butler, aka Loudmouth Man. Please visit www.socialmediawhitenoise.com. where you can leave comments, listen to the show straight from the webpage, and subscribe for free. Email us at ulot@socialmediawhitenoise.com. Follow us on Twitter, Dr. Pod, and Loudmouthman. We'd like to thank the coffee shops of Sussex, Social Media and Technology, without whom this show would not be possible. See you soon. Peace.